Welcome to IT ManageCast, the podcast for busy IT professionals who want news, reviews, and interviews on the topics of IT operations, service, and project management. So put your head in the cloud for the next 30 minutes and join your host, Jason Kennedy, for this week's episode of IT ManageCast.
Hello, listeners. This is indeed the IT ManageCast podcast, the podcast for busy IT professionals who want news, reviews, and interviews on IT service, IT operations, and project management. I am Jason Kennedy. I will be your host today for episode number 8. As we travel through the magic of internet audio to Main Island, British Columbia, to meet with Paul Robinson of Corporate Oasis, and we're going to discuss project management, professional certification, and other topics of interest. But before we get to the audio with Paul, I want to send some words of encouragement out to any of our listeners out there who are currently in the job search process. Trust me, I know it can be a tough grind sometimes, but the right job for you is out there. And hey, the broader you build your professional network, the better your chances of finding that job. So, where I'm going with this is, if you are a listener of this show, which if you're hearing this, you are a listener of this show, and I thank you very much for that. But hey, reach out to me, Jason Kennedy, on LinkedIn, and let me know you're a listener. Connect with our show on Twitter as well, at IT ManageCast. We want to hear from you, and today, I wish you the best day you can have, whatever it is that you are up to. Okay, now that sound you hear in the background ever so faintly, that is the frogs on Main Island. And those frogs are calling us. They're calling us to go and meet up with Paul Robinson of Corporate Oasis. A few weeks back, I was lucky enough to have longtime friend and colleague Paul invite me to his home over there on Main Island, where we spent the day hanging out, talking business, life in general, and we were able to record this podcast interview. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I bring you the interview with Paul Robinson.
All right, guys who are listening to this podcast, thanks very much for tuning in. And today we're going to have an interview with Paul Robinson of Corporate Oasis. Paul is the VP of Business Development, and he has graciously invited me over to his heritage home on Main Island where we're recording this interview. So thanks very much, Paul.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
So, Paul, why don't you give us a little bit of a background on yourself?
Well, I grew up in Vancouver Island. Moved from there in 1983 to go to Simon Fraser, and lived in Vancouver till 99, moved to Calgary at that point, and then I believe we met in 2003-2004 when I was doing a contract over at Best Buy back in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And still live in Calgary. My daughter's 17 years old now, and I told her when she's 18 and her friends are all growing up and moving out, when she's 18, I'm moving out. And I'm moving over to Maine here. So that's basically a little bit about me, my background.
Awesome. So we're going to play a little game we like to play with our guests on our show.
Okay.
Normally I call it 5 quick questions, but I have to confess that I forgot one of the questions. So we're going to call it 4 quick questions.
Or maybe 4 and then I'll ask you a question.
There you go. There you go. So first question for you, Paul, what's your favorite vacation spot?
Well, actually it happens to be right here. I'm really fortunate in that whenever I leave Main Island to go back to Calgary, people say, well, I guess you're heading back home. And I say, no, this is home. I just live in Calgary, but this is home. And so I'm fortunate to be able to say that my favorite vacation place is also my home at the same time. So
very lucky.
You're very lucky. Very fortunate.
Nice. Paul, what's the last book you read?
Just finished a book last week called Rasputin's Shadow. And fascinating book. It is fiction, and it's set in 2 parts of the 20th century. Initially the early part right around just before the Russian Revolution, and then also at the same time it takes place in the present day, so late 20th century, early 21st century. I won't give away too much of the plot, but it is based on how did Rasputin manage to gain his power with the monarchy in Russia, And how was that used in some potential espionage in the Cold War at the end of the 20th century and now, too? So,
interesting. Yeah. Intriguing.
Very intriguing. Very well written, too.
You're going good teaser for it, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't give any more than that.
Awesome. So, a preference question for you. Pen or pencil?
Pen.
And why is that?
I don't plan on making mistakes. So.
There you go. I like that. Very assertive. All right, next preference question.
I hope that doesn't come across as too cocky, but I just couldn't resist. No, I like pen just because I like the feel of a pen in my hand.
It's
not for the other reasons so much, but I like the weight and the feel of a pen. There's something about that with a pen, when you're using it, there's something, somebody's taken the time and effort to make that piece of writing equipment, and the artistry and the effort that's gone into it. I appreciate a good pen.
That's very cool. Okay. I like that answer. And last question for you, Windows, Mac, or Linux?
That one is interesting. Personally, I guess if we throw Android into the Linux category, I don't have a personal preference, but I will say that I lean strongly towards Windows, mainly because I find myself in a situation where I have to use what clients are using.
Right.
And I know that you can make the other environments work to mimic Windows, but it's never really 100%. Yep. And so I just find that when I'm working in a client site, I have to adapt to them. And the best way to do that is to use what they're using.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That seems to be a common answer when I ask that question.
Yeah. And of course, if everybody was using Mac, I'd be using Mac.
There you go. You got to work with the clients.
That's right.
So, Paul, why don't you tell us a little bit about Corporate Oasis? What do you guys do at Corporate Oasis?
So we founded Corporate Oasis. Actually, next year will be our 10th anniversary. I always like to say that within the leadership team at Corporate Oasis, we have over 200 years of IT experience. Now, Bob, if you're listening, I'll state that if you take Bob out of the equation, it's really only about 120 years of IT experience. A little dig there. Sorry, Bob, that's meant to be a compliment. We started under the premise that we really focus on IT methodologies and processes, IT operating philosophies, frameworks. We're more about the I in IT than the T. So really, if you look at us from a pillar perspective, first pillar would be about practice leadership. And within that pillar, you were talking about things like business relationship management, organizational change management, project management, business analysis, IT service management, about how do you take business initiatives, projectize them, and sustain them afterwards in a way that's strongly built on a relationship with the business throughout the life cycle.
Okay. So it's taking the life cycle of any project, mm-hmm. and seeing it through from, if I understand correctly, seeing it through from that aligning with the business goals, understanding the business drivers that are mm-hmm. creating the project, managing the project appropriately, mm-hmm. and then a transition to operations for
Absolutely.
Sustainability?
Yeah, very much so. And definitely a big emphasis on the pre-project work.
Okay.
The reason being is because projects start, projects are executed, projects complete, but processes to sustain the project, to sustain the product or the service that comes out of the project,
yes.
those support services don't end.
Right.
Whereas the project will end, it's a capital investment. The ongoing operational support, though, is something that happens forever. And we think of it very much like a Deming model. You know, you've got your as-is current state. Your business has needs. They have demands. They have challenges. They express those in terms of a business case that funnels into a project. The project ends. The new to-be environment is created as a result of that. That's now your current as-is. So it's very much a big Deming cycle.
Excellent.
And what we try to do is we're focused very much on the elimination of what we call the white space that occurs between the pillars. Back in the old days, really our founding philosophy is that back in the old days, we in IT did a lot of these things organically. We did business analysis, we did project management, we did service management. We had relationships with the business, but we did it just because of part of what we did. That was just our job. We didn't really have a lot of the language that you have nowadays for that. And then when the mainframes went away in the early 90s, late 80s, what we found was when the loading dock got got loaded up with the big iron, it also got loaded up with the methodologies at the same time.
Interesting.
And when the maturity went away, you had distributed systems, you had client server, you had Novell, you had all these things out there. No authoritative source of data, no mechanisms for security or backup or any of that, that maturity that we had previously. Even though it was built on legacy technology, the maturity was now gone. And people were focusing too much on the technology and not enough on the operating philosophies. And what to aggravate that, what we found was even further, when those philosophies came back into the industry, they came back in silos, which made it almost worse.
What do you mean by silos?
So, for example, ITIL, great model for service and support, but it focuses on service and support. And PMI, with their PMP certification, it's a really important common language for project managers to have. But again, it focuses on projects.
Right.
And IIBA, the International Institute for Business Analysis, came out with their CBAP certification, Certified right. Business Analysis Professional. Same thing, siloed. It focuses on business requirements. So what was happening was this emerging, almost like a divergence in different directions where the maturity was coming back, almost hub and spoke.
Okay.
And so you would find people, it was very fractionalized, very specialized. People were all of a sudden now an agile PM, or they were a waterfall PM, or they were a RUP PM. And then from the BA perspective, they were very focused on their business analysis methodologies and requirements gathering and traceability. But none of those tendrils linked back into project management.
Interesting.
So now all of a sudden we were in a situation where we had the maturity was gone. It came back, but it came back highly specialized and lots of disparate languages. How many PMs out there truly understand the IT service management language? Certainly, how many BAs out there understand the PM language?
Right.
So what we do is we're trying to eliminate effectively that kind of quote-unquote white space by taking business analysts and getting them trained up in project management, taking PMs and getting them trained in business analysis, and not to make them good BAs, but so that they can understand the BA function and how that ties into their methodology.
It makes a lot of sense. When you talk about that white space and that the maturity coming back into the industry, but in silos, do you think that that happenstance is aggravated or exacerbated, maybe is a better word, by things like, let's say, Gartner's maturity model, where they're really focusing on aspects of your business in measuring your maturity?
To some extent, I think so. But I think the problem is that all of these different models, they're all trying to do the right things. I mean, there's no shortage of maturity models out there. There's no shortage right. of methodologies and frameworks. But we're actually in the process right now. We have a roundtable in Calgary with some senior executives, and we're in the process of building out an overarching meta methodology where from beginning to end, what we can do is we can have these touch points, basically inputs and outputs of processes that touch into the different disciplines and sort of cinch them together. The thinking there is that it's going to be agnostic in terms of technology. It's agnostic in terms of the sub-methodologies, like, for example, which PM methodology you use.
Right.
And it's also agnostic in terms of business type and business vertical. So somebody would be able to look at this model, say if you're a PMO lead, and look at it and go, okay, here's where my PMO needs to touch the service management team, and here's where it needs to touch the business analysis team, and here's where it needs to touch the architecture team. I don't care how the architects do architecture. I don't care how the service management practitioners do service management. But I need to know, for example, when I have a risk on my project, what that means to the other teams. And how do I determine when to talk to them? So it's very much of an overarching methodology. It doesn't get prescriptive in any way, shape, or form in terms of what people do at the activity level. But it talks about how people interoperate at the higher level. So, for example, a BA, even before the initiative, the business initiative is projectized, the BA would work closely with the business relationship manager in the business to identify how do we take these requirements and build them into a business case. And don't forget to talk to the service management practitioners even before this thing is projectized, because they're the ones that are going to own the outcome. Right. So if you're going to build a business case, all of that sustainment methodology and all of that sustainment practice is going to be owned by the operational folks, and they're the ones that can really tell you what the true cost is of supporting this product or service. So all of those people at the very end that you're going to be transitioning your project to need to be involved even before it's a project to determine what's involved in sustaining it.
Interesting. Now, this methodology or meta methodology mm-hmm. that you're describing, is this something proprietary to corporate Oasis? Is this?
No, actually, what we're going to do is once this is built, the idea is to effectively publish it, train people on it, and then use organizations like PMI and IIBA and ITSMF to take this and show people how and where their methodology fits into the broader picture. The idea is that effectively once they're using it, they start to evangelize it for us.
Right.
It wouldn't be owned by Corporate Oasis. We will be doing things like producing literature, publications, training on it. Absolutely. We might even turn it into some kind of tool where people can ultimately effectively connect the dots. So some of the inputs, the levers, would be my organizational culture is highly structured and rigid. I work for the military, right? So it's very, very, very structured. Geographically, my teams are highly dispersed. So there's some levers that go into this.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
There's variables in terms of we don't have a lot of maturity in the PMO, but we might have a lot of maturity on the sustainment side.
So how would the map would help you understand how to leverage where you have more maturity right. to gain business advantage? So it's almost like a risk analysis tool in some ways.
Yeah, effectively, yeah. So you would put in your tolerance of risk. You'd put in your type of business culture you have.
Okay.
You would have things like what's your company's focus on growth. You'd have things like your geographical diversity. All of those things as your current state. And then you'd put in things like where you want to be and some of those, what those levers would look like. And then what this would tell you is how do you build a roadmap to get from point A to point B and at what time do these things actually happen? So the key is making sure that you do not get prescriptive about what happens within each of the methodologies. It doesn't matter how you manage a project. What matters is how does that project manager interface to the other people on the team based on those inputs, risk assessment, culture, geographic diversity.
Wow, that's really interesting, Paul.
Well, the nice thing about it, too, is it's very portable. It's very scalable. It really applies to everybody, and it's certainly not IT-focused either. You could take this and you can apply it to manufacturing, construction, engineering as well.
Interesting. So how is that progressing? When do you think we'll be able to learn more about that?
I would say by the end of the year, we'll have something we can really probably hold in your hand and talk about in the way of a piece of paper. Where it goes from there is going to be probably breaking out into different areas. Again, you know, we'll go and do management consulting. We could work with organizations to roadmap based on this meta methodology. And then down the road, potentially, maybe some kind of web-based tool where people can input, and maybe they subscribe to it. They input the variables, they talk about where they want to be and when they want to be there, and this thing will start to help them roadmap it.
Now, would this be one of those situations where the more people who get on board early and test out the tool, the faster the tool will mature because it's actually going to use the input and the feedback from those participating in it to actually help build that mapping function, that road mapping function?
Absolutely. In fact, that comes back to the whole Deming model. So initially, the connection points, it's almost like, you know, when you're a kid and you see the bouncing ball and you follow the music with the bouncing ball.
Yeah.
It'll be something similar like that. It'll be very thin and very small and very lightweight. But as you use the tool, you are expected to provide input back into it saying, I tried this and it didn't work for these reasons, or I tried this, or here's something that I tried and it didn't actually, your model didn't come up with it, but I want to put it back in there. And over time, organically, it will grow. The number of levers will grow and it'll learn a little bit more about what makes sense in certain models. So,
wow, that is really fascinating. And I'm sure our listeners will want to come back to hear more about that.
Yeah, we call it the interdisciplinary framework. That's the tool.
Makes sense. That's awesome. So you talked a little bit about some of the stuff that Corporate Oasis, Corporate Oasis does, and you know, getting rid of the white space and the more global approach to delivering services for your customers. Corporate Oasis, you guys have been Alberta-based?
Initially, yep. We started in Alberta back in 2006. We opened our office in Vancouver last year.
Okay.
And that's a good segue into two of the other pillars. Everything we've talked about up until now is just one of the pillars.
Okay.
So that's really the practice leadership side of, you know, going into an environment and basically helping them improve. The second pillar is training and education. So last year we started our PMP certification in Calgary.
Okay.
This year we'll be starting that in Vancouver and Victoria. Later this year, we're going to be one of the first adopters in Canada for BRM training, business relationship management training.
Interesting.
There is, yeah, it's one of the fastest growing certifications in the U.S. right now is business relationship management.
And now, what does that mean, Paul? If you business relationship, maybe help our listeners understand.
Sure. When I was, again, back in the mainframe days, we used to have a team of individuals called effectively account managers. So we would have somebody in IT that was brought in from finance, actually has a financial background, worked in finance, decided that they didn't want to take their career further down the financial path, and wanted to get into IT. So they would move up and across diagonally into IT, and they became effectively the liaison into finance.
Okay.
So when tax time came around, for example, what would happen is the first thing that would happen is that this liaison would work with the financial folks, the CFO and all of the individuals in that team, to find out what the implications were with these tax changes, understand their language in their terms, what the implications were, and translate that back into IT vernacular, and then go back to the architects and the developers and the IT leadership and say, we have to make these changes to these systems.
Okay.
Now, I think there was a point in time where people thought that the BAs would be able to take on this role.
Right.
And I don't think that that has succeeded, and I don't think it will succeed for a few reasons. One is the BAs sometimes, but not always, come from the business side. And what you'll find in a lot of cases is somebody from IT eventually moves into a BA role,
right,
and they become a BA for HR and finance and merchandising and logistics and distribution, but they're not necessarily from any one of those groups. So they don't necessarily always know that language, but they do have a gift for being able to draw out requirements from people. And I think that is definitely an art, and BAs have to have it. But a lot of what the BAs do is also very tactical, in the sense that it's project focused,
okay,
as opposed to relationship focused. So the BAs do have a specific role on a project to make sure requirements are properly elicited, validated, traced through the project, and translated into quality assurance, and then transitioning over to production. Those are important activities, but it's very project focused. The business relationship manager is more relationship focused. They understand the needs, and they can often anticipate the needs of a department. So case in point, if a project in IT is about to be embarked upon, and at the beginning you involve the BRMs from the different groups, somebody from HR, the BRM HR might put their hand up and say, what you're about to do will change business processes on the HR side. We need to take that into consideration, and we need to meet with them to find out how we're going to deal with this. So it's very much focused on relationship. It's not, generally speaking, focused on technology. And you can actually get certification in it now. There is a BRMI, Business Relationship Management Institute, that offers certification in that. And we are going to be one of the first in Canada to offer that training as well.
Fantastic. Well, on the topic of training that you offer, you said there was training was one of the three pillars. And you talked about the BRM certification. Is there other training?
Yep. So there's the PMP certification, and that's endorsed by Project Management Institute. Business analysis certification is something that we're looking at getting into, and we're not sure which direction we're going to take on that just yet. And the reason being is the International Institute for Business Analysis did have CBAP certification. They still do, but now PMI is actually almost absorbing the BA role. If you look on the PMI website, they do a lot in the BA space now that they didn't do before.
Interesting.
So there may end up being PMI BA certification in the not-too-distant future. We're also looking at organizational change management, OCM, PROCI, certification, ADCAR. But we're not sure where that's going just yet with the market. So the big focus right now is, let's get people focused on a common language for project management. The most widely recognized common language for PM is the PMP certification. It's internationally recognized. It's not just IT certification. When I did mine in 2007, in the class, I was one of, out of 30 people, I was one of five in IT. The rest were all in construction or engineering or manufacturing. Right. And they were getting their PMPs.
And they still are. I have a friend of mine who is in the construction industry who just recently got his PMP.
Mm-hmm. Very much a common language. And up until, you know, the early 2000s, it was out there, but it really wasn't. It wasn't kind of the de facto common ground that you really needed in the industry. So we're finding more and more. There's a lot of demand by clients for PMP certification. I'll be the first to say it doesn't necessarily make you a better PM. It's not intended to make you a better PM. It's really just establishes a ground, like a baseline of ability to have languages shared between other disciplines and within PM.
So much like the ITIL certification is intended that there's a common language that everybody involved in IT service delivery and service operations and service planning would all have the same common language.
And, you know, it's interesting you should bring that up, too, because I find that there's some misconceptions that are common across IT service management and project management where people get far too prescriptive about it. And, for example, with ITIL, they say, well, there's a right way to do ITIL and there's a wrong way to do ITIL. And I'm like, what do you even mean by saying doing ITIL? I don't even know what that means, let alone doing it right or wrong. I don't know what it means to do ITIL. Right. There's processes that you pull from that are the right ones at the right time for the right client based on their needs. And you take those out and you build the best specific solution for a specific client based on what those needs are. It's the same with PMP. You can't just open the book and say, I'm going to do my project in a PMP way. What you should be doing is saying, oh, now what's the formula for earned value management, net present value? How is it again that I evaluate risk and communicate risk? You go back to the PMBOK and you look at it and you use it as a means of a subscriptive way of being able to determine what's the best approach for your project. So you subscribe to that methodology, but it's not really being prescribed to you.
Okay.
And I find that in a lot of cases where you get people, it's a bit of a dichotomy because in some cases you'll get people who have never really managed a lot in the way of projects. They're fairly new, and then they come in, they get their PMP certification, and they think that's the only way to do it.
Right.
There's a risk in that. The other risk, though, is you get people who have been spending years and years and years doing project management, and all of a sudden they go to get their PMP certification. It's like changing your golf swing. Because you've got this swing that works for you, and there's nothing wrong with it, but now all of a sudden you're in this different world where they say it's got to be done this way. But in reality, it doesn't have to be done that way. It's just language. That's
right.
What people get caught up on. They're testing your knowledge of the PMBOK. They're not testing whether you're a good PM.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Paul, on that topic, I understand that there is a PMP certification offering, as you've told us, that Corporate Oasis has. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So we've rebranded material out of an organization in the States called VelociTeach. They won 2012 PMI Education Provider of the Year based on the material.
Wow.
And the reason they won the award, and when you see the material, it's very clear. They basically provide their training in a way that services and supports every type of learning style, auditory, visual, you name it. There's all those different dimensions of learning. They've captured them and they cater to them. So when you get the training package from Corporate Oasis, what you get is you get a series of CDs that are effectively audiobooks. You get a textbook, which accompanies the PMBOK. You get flashcards for testing. One side's question, one side is the answer, and you just use the flashcards over and over again.
Right.
A six-sided reference sheet for the visual learners. So if somebody like me, that's what I would focus on is this huge, you roll it out, it's almost like wallpaper of references.
Now see, I'm gonna segue just for a moment. When you say six-sided reference sheet, the first thought that came to my mind was the dice for Dungeons and Dragons. But you're talking about like a trifold.
Yeah.
8.5 by 11 in trifold with information on all the sides and probably just loaded.
That's right. Yeah. So effectively, you're right. You open it up. There's three sheets and it's printed both sides.
Okay.
So. So you're right. It's not like a dodecahedron of... so there's that. And then also all of this material is available online in a way that's can be absorbed differently. So the different knowledge areas and different process groups, you can dive into each one in a way that you kind of can't really do it with the book. So it does give you, again, a different experience. I think the icing on the cake, though, is really the exam simulator. So thousands of questions that are in a database that are randomly thrown out to you, and you have access to this material for 6 months after you take the class. You write the exam, and you write the exam, and you write the exam until you consistently get 90%, and you can write it as many times as you want. Nobody's grading you, but what happens is...
Through the simulator.
Through the simulator, right. Exactly. Okay. And then what happens is when you get your marks back on the simulator, you can see the areas that you need to focus on. So again, Deming, right? You're constantly going back. When you feel comfortable, you go in and write the exam and you pass. And when you, if you don't feel comfortable, you don't write the exam. So there really is no reason after you've taken the course, taken the material, read the material, taken the simulations, there's really no reason why you wouldn't pass the exam.
So given that that great pitch, the students who've taken your classes so far, how are they doing?
Everybody who's written the exam so far has passed. And we've always told them, in the event that something happens, maybe you're just having an off day or you're sick or you get stage fright and you don't pass the exam, which has never happened. But if it did, we'd welcome them back, take the course over again. You've already got the material. We'll extend your license for the simulator. Just come back and take the next class, sit in on it. We're not going to charge you for that.
That's a pretty amazing offer.
So you're going to get your PNP one way or another. You're going to get
Corporate Oasis will make sure you get your PNP.
You will get your PNP. We're going to be working. Yeah, we're going to lock shoulders with you. So really, the process is, this is the PMI sort of pre-qualification process. They do have some gates that you have to pass before you can write your exam. Things like, for example, you have to have so many credit hours of training. Well, this course here satisfies that one requirement.
Okay.
You take this course, that gives you exactly the number of hours you need.
So how many days does the course take?
It's 3 full days.
Okay.
And then, of course, you have homework. And if you do the 3 days and do the homework, you've got your 35 hours of education credits that you need to write the exam.
Okay.
You also need to become a member of PMI, which is basically just cutting a check. And then you also need to be able to demonstrate work in those knowledge areas as either a PM or a project coordinator or some kind of PM leadership role.
Okay.
You apply online. They'll turn it around within about 48 hours. So they'll say, yes, you're a PMI member. Yes, you've demonstrated that you have enough working experience. Yes, you've demonstrated you have the academic experience through the credit from the course that you've just taken. Now you're qualified to write the exam. And once you get that, you're good to go.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's really helpful to outline that, because I know it's the PMP certification, it's everybody's talking about it. I mean, I'm looking in the job market right now, and it seems to be either a requirement or a recommendation for pretty much every role that has anything to do with project management these days. And so there's a lot of people who may not have had the, particularly people who've been in the industry for a lot of years and didn't need to have the PMP, but now it's becoming a bit of a roadblock. So I know a lot of people are really interested in understanding what does this look like? What does this mean? How do I get this done?
What I would suggest too is go to PMI.org, and there is a button there. You click on it and it'll give you, and I'm not sure right off the top of my head what that is, but it's easy to find on the main page. It will tell you all the steps in order to become qualified to write your exam, but it basically comes down to those factors. Get your PMI membership, get your 35 hours of training. If you have no post-secondary education, you need 7,500 hours of working experience in those knowledge areas. If you have post-secondary, it's only 4,500 hours of working experience. And there is about a 5 to 10% chance that they will audit you.
Okay.
So you need to provide references that will back you up, because you could get audited. I've seen it happen.
Right on. That's good to know.
Yeah, they're very serious about this. And that's one of the reasons why I think this certification is so much in demand, is because there are barriers to entry.
Right.
It's not necessarily a difficult exam. They've actually made it easier over time. But there are barriers of entry to get in. And so what it does is it demonstrates to the clients that, again, there's a certain amount of maturity here. There's a certain amount of understanding of what the role of a project manager is and the common language. I think all too often in the past, you'd find people who are great leaders. They were able to motivate people. They were able to get things done. They understood some technology. And all of a sudden they were thrown into a role where they were managing projects. And they probably did a great job, but you get five PMs in a company that would be managing projects five different ways. Right. And so there was no way to roll up, where are we with all our projects right now? Where do we stand from an overall financial perspective? What are our interrelated risks? We don't know. And the reason we don't know is the PMs aren't doing it all the same way. Right. Now, having said that, there is no one way, right way to manage.
But this is a way where there's a common lexicon for everybody who's working together.
Yeah, the vernacular is the same. The lexicon is the same. The taxonomy is the same. And it's portable enough so different organizations can tweak it and use it in a way that suits their culture and their environment, but still leverages the best parts of the common language as well.
Excellent.
So that's our second pillar. The third one is really what we do is if we've already established a relationship with the client on the practice side and we've established a relationship with the client on the training side, it kind of behooves us to be able to provide resource augmentation too.
Okay.
So if a client says to us, you know, you did a great job in helping build out our PMO and you've increased our level of maturity. Now we've got these five projects over here that need some PMs.
Right.
Well, why wouldn't we help people who are looking for contracts or looking for full-time work? Why wouldn't we help them to come on board with a client and actually satisfy those roles? Whether it's interim or employee, it doesn't matter, but it just is a natural extension of what we do.
Right. So that's the third pillar. And they all seem to really knock from one to the next. As you said, it's really about building that trust relationship with the customers.
Yep. Practice leadership, education, and resources. Right now, Calgary, Vancouver are our markets. In the next few years, we'll see where that goes. Definitely focusing more on Western Canada. And then we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens in the future.
Awesome. So, Paul, maybe to wrap it up, if people are interested in learning more about any of those three pillars, and how would they contact Corporate Oasis? How would they get in touch with you or any of the other folks there?
Well, I always kind of take the keep it simple approach. So, you know, I could send them to our website, which is corporateoasis.com, or I could tell them to email our general mailbox, which is info@corporateoasis.com. But I'm not going to tell you to do that. I'm going to say, just call me. Email me. My email, personal email, is paul.robinson@corporateoasis.com. And I believe in high touch, you know, if you're interested, I'm not going to send you through groups. Come talk to me personally. I'll be able to help you out. And whether it's with regards to the resource augmentation or the certification or practice leadership, start with me and I can help. And then we'll send you down to the, you know, down the right channel.
Fantastic. Paul, thank you very much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Jason, and I love what you're doing here. This is fantastic. Thank you. Thanks.
Hey, all right. So that was our interview with Paul Robinson. Great guy, a lot of fun. And if you want to reach out to him, you've got his contact info there. So thanks for listening through that interview with us. I hope you learned as much as I learned speaking with Paul and learning from him. Now, let's move on to our IT news segment. Folks, I'd like to share with you a cool news item that came across my desk this week. Chinese fabless semiconductor company and mobile SoC solution provider Rockchip. Boy, that's a mouthful. Chinese semiconductor company Rockchip has introduced what they are marketing as the world's lowest power Wi-Fi technology. It's the Rockchip RKI-6000. The RKI-6000 is a new ultra-low power Wi-Fi and memory technology that greatly reduces power consumption of IoT or Internet of Things smart devices by, they claim, 85%. This is going to advance the widespread adoption of IoT in everyday products and appliances, as it's going to provide more efficient power. It is also going to provide a lower price and a smaller size form factor and the ability to use Wi-Fi for the development of Internet of Things devices. They don't need to be physically connected to anything. The power consumption on these items is now equal to that of Bluetooth 4.0 LE, low energy, with a receiving power consumption around 20 milliamp hours during use. So that's, as we said, 85% lower than standard Wi-Fi with a built-in RF architecture. So what this means for Rockchip for folks who are looking at adopting this technology, you can use a coin battery. In addition, a AAA battery can be used for up to 35 years. I don't know if a AAA battery can actually physically last 35 years before it starts to corrode, but hey, very cool. The RKI6000 allows Wi-Fi-based smart product design in a variety of markets, including wearable, consumer electronics, mainstream home appliances, home safety, automation systems, automobiles, and medical equipment. So, great story. I thought that was really interesting. If you're interested in learning more about that, again, Google the Rockchip RKI6000. Now, before we wrap up today's news, I do have a little message of support I want to send out. And this week in Las Vegas, Nevada is, quote unquote, the big show for HP customers and partners. The HP Discover Americas 2015 conference is going on as I record this podcast. And I just wanted to shout out to some support to my friends and colleagues who are working that show. Have an awesome and productive week in the meetings, sessions, and on that show floor. In addition, folks, it's time, that time of year, it is that time of year when we start to think about, as they always say, dads and grads. So to that end, I'm going to feature some gift ideas for the tech worker dad or the tech-oriented grad looking to get into the IT job market. That'll be on our next episode, so, you know, watch out for that one. Hopefully it'll be interesting. And folks, if you have news or events that you'd like shared on our show, please, please make sure you send it to us at itmanagecast@gmail.com. Now, for our tip of the week, normally we will talk about a project management or operations management practical tip. This week, I want to talk to you a little bit, again, staying on the theme of this show, about education and educating yourself. So, folks, we want to encourage any of those who are interested in IT security and privacy to check out sans.org/webcasts. They've got a variety of topics from the technical to the leadership level. There's about 16 webcasts coming up starting June 9th and running through the summer. It is a great way to hone your knowledge on a particular topic area without the costs of travel. I also want to remind you that if you have any IT project or operations management tips or tricks that you'd like to share, please send them to us via Twitter at itmanagecast or email them to us at itmanagecast@gmail.com. And we will make sure that you get full credit when we share them in an upcoming episode. So that wraps up today's show. And listeners, it has been fantastic sharing with you, and I want to thank you sincerely for joining me on the IT Managed Capacity. I want to also thank myself for not being able to say the name of my own podcast. Folks, I do sincerely want to thank you for joining me once again on the IT Managed Cast podcast, and I do look forward to having all of you come back and listen for our next episode.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to IT Managed Cast. We hope you enjoyed spending this time with us, and we really want to hear from you. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at IT Managed Cast and email us your thoughts and opinions at itmanagecast@gmail.com. To join us for our live recordings, follow us on Google Plus and YouTube. This show is Creative Commons Copyright 2015 by Jason J. Kennedy.